Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood. And welcome to Make Me Smart, a podcast where we try to remember how to start the show.
I am a trained radio professional. I really am. Oh, my God.
Welcome to Make Me Smart, a podcast where we try to get a little smarter every week about business, technology, culture, you know, our rundown.
We're doing it with your help, and also Molly is helping me out because clearly I don't know what I'm doing. You tell us the things you want to learn more about and share with us the things you know more about than anybody else because, as we like to say around here, learn a bunch, pass it on.
It's super official, you guys. And also, this would be a good time to point out that this episode is being recorded released on Monday, the day after Daylight Savings Time transition. So bear with us. We have a good show, though.
We do.
We're going to do our best. And we actually have a great show. Singer-songwriter Marion Call is here. Kai, you know this person.
I do. I had her on about the whole first seven jobs hashtag, if you remember that, on Twitter. I did it. Molly did it. Buzz Aldrin did it. Lin-Manuel Miranda did it. Everybody did it. We got her back to tell us what happened next. And there's a supercomputer involved.
Which, like, you know, I'm into it.
I know.
And I should point out, she launched it. She started the hashtag.
Yeah.
And then, of course, supercomputer and song. And, like, she's a woman after my nerd heart. And you will hear all of that very soon. But first, we got to get our fix.
The News Fix is that part of this show where we talk about stuff that's in the news that matters to you and to us and put it into context. Because, man, there ain't nothing that happens out there without context, whether it's business, economics, technology, culture, you name it. You want to start or you want me to start?
I have an idea.
Okay.
We'll talk about business, then we'll talk about tech, then we'll talk about culture.
Okay.
Let's try it.
And I think the general theme that will be discovered here is the more things change, the more they stay the same, or ain't it always that way? My personal favorite this week is the debt limit. It's that time of the fiscal cycle again where Congress and the president have to agree that it's okay for the U.S. to borrow more money to pay its debts. That is known as the debt limit. It's statutorily required for some reason that escapes me, and it's coming due on the 16th. We've been without one now for a year plus, and now that sort of suspension of the debt limit expires on the 16th, which is Wednesday, which means we're not going to be able to borrow any more money. The Treasury Secretary is going to do what's called extraordinary movement of money, moving around between accounts, but bottom line is we're not going to be able to borrow any more money, which means we can't pay our bills, which is a problem.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. This is like one of those things that comes around all the time and then people panic. And I still don't totally understand like which part is statutorily required, the part where we actually have a limit, except that sometimes we don't have to have a limit.
Yes and yes. So here's the deal. We, since approximately the First World
War. This makes no sense.
The amount of money that the U.S. can borrow, the amount of money we can be in debt has been statutorily limited and has to be, increases in it have to be approved by the Congress and then signed into law by the president. We now owe something like $19.8 trillion. And if you remember about a year, year and a half ago in the most recent set of budget negotiations, they agreed to suspend the debt limit. That is, in a legislative sense, put their fingers in their ear and go la, 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 and not worry about the debt limit because there were other things going on. There was, by the way, an election, and they didn't want to get bogged down in the perennial fight over, oh, my goodness, should we raise the debt limit? So now that suspension of the debt limit expires on midnight on the 16th of March, 2017, which is otherwise known as Wednesday. Okay, Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, now has to move money around between government accounts so that he can keep paying our bills. Here's the catch with the debt limit. The debt limit has to be raised to pay money that we have already borrowed or owed against. That is to say, it's not borrowing to fund future operations. It's borrowing to pay money that we've already spent, which is why this thing makes me crazy.
Well, in that, when you put it that way, it doesn't sound like the limit is a very good idea.
Well, right. I mean, obviously, you want to have some...
Except that limits are a good idea.
Yes, except for the fact that we, as a society, can't control ourselves and keep wanting more stuff. And when we want more stuff in a government sense, we either have to A, be taxed more, or borrow more to get it. And we're not willing to pay taxes in this country, as we all know. So we have to borrow more to get it. And that's what happens. And so the reason it's interesting this time is because the last 8 years' worth of debt limit increases, six of the last eight, I guess, have come with a divided government, right? Have come with Republicans in control of Congress and a Democrat in the White House. And it was always, oh, my God, Obama wants to raise the debt limit. And that's just terrible and irresponsible. And Obama would say, Republicans want to crash the government. They want to default on the debt. And that's just terrible. And you're like, for crying out loud, you guys cut it out. Now we've got Republicans in control of the entire government. There will still be sniping about the debt limit. It's going to happen. It's going to be passed, but because it has to be passed, because you don't want to mess around with the full faith and credit of the United States, which is a whole different podcast.
Right.
But there, it's a little bit more interesting this time, politics wise.
So what would I have one last question on this?
Yeah.
What would one expect from what we used to consider a normal Republican administration? Like, what are the Republican points of view? Would it be lower or freeze the debt limit? You know, keep it low and figure out the rest and cut the APA? Or, you know, what would one expect? And then what will... I feel like you might have inadvertently argued for cutting the EPA in there at one point. So,
well, that's a whole different thing.
What's the thinking here?
Well, so we've had, just to put this in context, right? We've had this whole long conversation Molly and I have had for a month and a half now over what's normal and what's not normal in the Trump administration. It would be completely normal for the president to say, man, I don't want to do this, but we gotta. And for Congress to say, man, we don't want to do this, but we gotta. Right. I mean, that's right. It literally has to happen because you don't want to screw around with the credibility of American debt. But my worry is that for some reason, something weird will happen and there will be sniping and we will get, as we always get, close to that real debt limit after Mnuchin moves the money around. And people will go, oh, my God, we're going to default, when in reality, we're not. And it makes the bond market crazy. It makes investors crazy. It makes business journalists crazy. It just makes people crazy.
All right.
Crazy.
So crazy times ahead.
Yes.
Got it.
Now.
Noted.
Yes. I would like to speak with you about the rest of your week, please.
Oh, dear God.
Well, come on. You're getting a vacation. You're going to South By and you're going to have a good old time and drink some, you know, cheap Texan beer and I don't even know what. Is that not what happens at South By?
It's called, there's a kind, Shinerbach.
Shinerbach,
the Texas beer? Shinerbach. South by Southwest is happening, which if you follow anyone in the tech industry on Twitter, you already know about it. Though I will say that there's the one great thing about kind of the constant news flow since the Trump administration took office is that all the annoying stuff that people usually tweet about in the tech world is really muted, which for me is a bit of a delight. For example, like the crunchies happened and nobody even cared, which was so nice.
I don't even know what the crunchies. What are the crunchies?
Yeah, you know, it's like the TechCrunch web awards.
Oh,
it's like the
lame
Webbies kind of, but it's the crunchies and it's for startups and stuff. And it's just, all the tweeting is like, you know, triumphant venture capitalists. And that is basically all of the tweeting that comes out of South by Southwest too, because it is at its heart. Someone described it recently as all the panels are basically every Medium post you've read all year. And
what?
And then the general vibe of the entire event is essentially high school. Like, are you cool enough to have been invited to this party and that party and then the other party? And it's just, it's a slightly unbearable event, regardless of the beer.
So that's where I want to climb in here, because I have two questions. One is, we were talking on the phone, obviously, before we got into the studios to talk about what we were going to talk about. And you said this thing goes three more weeks?
I think it's 3 weeks long in total, and then it started this weekend. So, so South by Southwest used to be, you know, the music festival. Then they added a film component, and then at some point they added an interactive component, and that is this sort of tech and digital and ad and media universe.
Yeah.
And it is now ballooned into almost the entire month of March. So it all started. So a lot of it happened this weekend. There were apparently some really cool parties that like I already missed. But I have to say, it's been a really... I'm flying tomorrow. It's been a really long time since there was any news coming out of South by Southwest. And true to form, this year, the only thing that I have read with any consistency about South by Southwest is just people complaining about how there's no Uber or Lyft in Austin.
Oh my God, that's so funny. So you know what?
Tells you exactly how bad it is.
What's your sense of the last big news to come out of South by? I've got an entry in that sweepstakes if you can't come up with one.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. So like Yik Yak? It's always like a messaging app. It's always just a messaging app that the people at South by Southwest are using to plan parties that you're not cool enough to go to. It is the worst. I don't want to go.
Twitter in 2007 is my entry.
Yeah, no, that you're right. Yeah. That's exactly it. And if you think about it, it was ultimately like a communications app, so they could all just
exactly
be cool.
Totally. I was at South by once, and the entire time I was there, I had two conflicting thoughts in my head. One was, "Wow, this is really cool. What great parties!" And the other one is, "Why would anybody want to come here?"
So every time I go, it's been a couple years since I went. They're going to uninvite me, by the way. This is so rude, but I'm doing a panel there. I am actually, you know, moderating a panel. It's going to be really interesting. It's actually about immigration in the tech industry. So I think it is going to be a really interesting panel, and it's great timing to be talking about that issue. H-1B visas have now, you know, the expedited process has now been frozen. The tech industry is really worried about what's going to happen with those visas. But yeah, pretty much every time I go, I rock it in there and just like run around. There are so many people, and then you just run around all over the place, and you can never get an Uber. And then, you know, I'm not going to be honest, like you party too hard. And then whatever, 3 days later, I'm at the airport and I'm just miserable and I want to die. And I have not had any fun at all. And that is South by Southwest in a nutshell.
As I said at the top of the show, the more things change, the more they stay the same. That's the theme of the broadcast this week.
Pretty much.
All right. What else do we have to say? Anything?
I'm going to give you one book recommendation before we go. This is like a book club extra. Okay. Which is related to the things that we've been talking about on the show with Uber, this idea that innovation, disruption, you know, sowing chaos as a means of taking away the sort of ruling class, that disruption itself is often overstated, usually overrated. And I just read in The Atlantic about this new book by Tyler Cohen. His book's called The Complacent Class, The Self-Defeating Quest for the American Dream, which argues that essentially all the innovation in America that we think we're doing all the time, we're just not doing it all. We're actually just sitting around watching TV, and we're trapped into expensive houses or locked out of innovative markets because of housing prices. And so we're not getting anything done.
Oh my God, I chuckled, but that's so sad. That's terrible.
It's a sad story. Yeah. But it's very interesting, right? Like disruption.
Yeah.
Look. The same people always end up winning.
Yeah, which is where we started. More of the same.
Which is where we started.
More of the same.
More of the same.
Let us know what you think about the current state of disruption or more of the same or any of that jazz. Write to us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Go to our website, if that's easier, marketplace.org/makemesmart. Tweet at us. I'm at Kai Rizdahl. She is, of course, at Molly Wood.
And if you want to be part of our agenda setting, if you will, our weekly editorial meetings, check us out on Facebook. It's usually Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Pacific on our Facebook pages. If you follow our pages on Facebook, and this is super handy, then Facebook will actually tell you when we're going live. But we're going live, taking your comments, getting ideas about what to talk about on the show. And also just, I don't know, I think our videos are really fun.
I do too, but I'm not entirely objective. Next up, singer-songwriter Marion Call on what happens when your music catches the eye or the chip of a supercomputer and the people who work for that computer, I guess.
And we set out in the springtime with our bindles and our boots. And we reveled in our poverty, abandoning our roots. A brand new path, adventurers, all lonely, bold and brave. Breaking free and making do, and telling tales of how we'd save ourselves.
Man, I love some good harmony. That,
I mean, that's just beautiful. That is a song called Oregon Trail off of Marion Call's latest album, Standing Stones.
So we had, I had Marion Call on Marketplace, August of last year.
That long ago?
It was, I know. She was in her hometown, Juneau, Alaska, and she was writing a song, or wanted to write a song about work, right? And tweeted out a hashtag called First Seven Jobs.
Yeah,
right?
I think I didn't even use a hashtag.
What'd
the hashtag
say?
Started after it caught on after I went to bed. I think I tweeted at like 10 p.m. and I woke up in the morning and it was all over Europe. And I was like, what happened?
How did that happen? As you may or may not be able to tell, Marion Call is sitting here in the studio with me. Right. And we're going to talk about what happened after that and her new album and all kinds of stuff because I kind of dug it.
And Kai had a great conversation with Marion, which if you want to catch up, will be on our website, marketplace.org/makemesmart.
And here's the last question I asked her. Let's just hit that tape. Now that you have all this data on this topic that you want to write about, when do we get to hear the song?
No promises on that. I've been writing songs too long to promise a date. But I'm working on a big record project now, and probably after that. It's surprisingly hard to hoover up all the information, though, in any way. I'm still looking for the exact tool that will let me filter all these results and see what we got.
So, not to rush the creative process, but hoovering up all that stuff, all that data, what'd you do with it? How'd it work?
Oh, I had several people get in touch with me, actually, about how to collect all the tweets. Twitter doesn't actually make it particularly easy. But one of the people who contacted me was someone with the social media connection team at Watson for IBM.
From IBM, yeah.
But they got in touch and said, oh, hey, Watson can do this. And I was like, what? Okay, cool. So
that is amazing.
Yeah. So they were able, of course, to simply call up Twitter and get the information directly since it's...
Being IBM,
the Watson team, they were able to just call up Twitter and get the information directly. And the result was not like a super in-depth study or sortable spreadsheet, which I would have loved. It would have been really difficult to make anyway. But they did come up with a great infographic, and it turned out not to be that complicated because an incredible number of people have had the same first seven jobs.
Waitress,
right? Babysitting, intern. Yeah. I'm looking at the infographic now. Intern,
well,
cashier.
I would say, lawn care and child care were probably the biggest two or the most common that we saw. It was pretty and of course those were both things I did for money, you know, as a kid.
Totally.
And but I like the idea that we have this in common.
But so then what happened when you got all of that information? Is there a song?
I brought a draft.
Did you really?
Of course I did.
All right, give us a little acapella. This is awesome.
Oh, all right. Well, it's acapella. Anyway, this is, I actually started this song as a commission for a sled dog musher.
I love that sentence. Oh, my God.
That is awesome.
This song is about work and about just the universality of it. And I'm really interested in how work is changing right now. You guys were talking a lot about, the structure of employer taking care of employee is falling to pieces. Yeah. And that's okay. We just don't know what comes next yet. And we're not in any sort of political or economic position to build it either. Because, as you said, the same old people always wind up benefiting from the quote disruption.
Look at you picking up on the theme. She was listening in.
I was a liberal arts major, you know.
We should have had you in the news fix. This is totally working.
I should have hopped in here.
So go ahead. If you've got a couple of stanzas, as it were.
Yeah, I haven't warmed up, so we'll see how this goes.
But
this is the general idea. It goes like this. Hayach kayach 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 kadnada. Hayach kayach 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 kadnada. For all and ox and ex and till. Hayach kayach kaya. For what we can and what we will. Oh, the day is but a mouth to fill. The day is but a mouth to fill. Oh, the idle mind will come to blows, forgetting what the body knows. Hunger owns us each and all. Oh, that hunger is the highest law. Arrival is illusion, no, the journey it is home. Arrival is illusion, no, the trail is home. Hayach, kayach, 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 kay, hadnada. Hayach, kayach, 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 kay, hadnada. Hay, hay, haya, haya, hay, hadnada.
Wow, that was cool. That
was
first
awesome.
Those first couple of lines. What was that?
Those first couple of lines for all and ox and axe and till, and I was coming up with as many of those as I could, because the song goes on from there. More just simply the verbs that we might do now and we might have done for millennia. You know,
kind of
what interests me, because there's some things that we do now that we have always done, and there are some things we do now that people 20 years couldn't imagine, 20 years ago. Merely.
But hunger is the highest law.
Hunger is the highest law. Oh, you living in Alaska, you think about that a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's fun being up there because you feel like at the same time as my job is entirely living on the internet and hanging out on Twitter all day, you know, as a musician. I'm doing that, but at the same time, I'm surrounded by people who actually, you know, still hunt, still fish, grow their own food. I'm trying to, you know, get my kale going on the garden porch, you know, because we're very aware up there how fragile our connection is to groceries, you know, and surrounded by people who have, you know, just dined off the land for thousands of years, as they say in Juneau, where I live, when the tide is out, the table is set. And you just go down on the beach and gather what there is to eat, and you eat. And I feel like that is always in the back of my mind, that anything could happen. A small thing, even just an air travel disruption for a few days, you know, and we would be without food.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy the fact that I still feel connected to that precarity up there.
You built your career in part right, by doing these house tours all over the country. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Self-employment, it's great. It's I get to travel everywhere, but only if I'm working, really. And so I go everywhere I go. I get to go see anyone I want. I get to go anywhere I want as long as I do some concerts. And so I've played, I'm actually, this is 10 years being an independent musician full-time, which I love that it's possible on a small scale, you know. I've been very lucky to get this far doing it on a small scale. I've been to all 50 states, have done 3 Europe tours, probably do another one soon. Everywhere is starting to look familiar now. I've been on every highway, I've been in every city of size in the U.S. and played shows in most of them, often in living rooms, sometimes in big theaters, you know, once in a while I'll have a big show, but mostly it's, you know, 20 to 50 people in a home, which is honestly the way that music has been enjoyed since it, you know, since we existed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the process, I guess you build a community, right? I mean, you build.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's nothing without a community. I just did a. This last album, Standing Stones, was funded by a Kickstarter. Most of my stuff is crowdfunded in one way or another. And I've been a musician long enough to see several crowdfunding models kind of rise and fall.
I bet.
But in my Kickstarter, I knew the names of almost everyone who backed me, you know? It was nearly 1,000 people. I most of them I recognized from Twitter or from concerts, and several of them I knew really well. You know, I've slept on their couches. I know their kids. I've played with their pets. Even one of them I met at South By, which was something I did the first year I was a musician in this sort of, like, little indie music side stage thing. Now, you know, South By's a lot bigger. And I'm a lot more experienced. I'm experienced enough to know not to go to South By as a musician. Nobody
That's
goes
a terrible
there. It's
mistake.
No, it's a tech conference now, really. I mean, it's
the worst.
I remember walking down the streets, down 6th Street, and I love Austin. I spent a lot of time there. I recorded my last album there. I just adore Austin. But I remember walking down the streets and seeing people's CDs literally lying on the sidewalk getting walked upon. And I thought, because when you made it, it's like a kitten that you want to send to a good home. You know, you put everything into it. And I was like, oh God. Then I realized that if we all rush the same solution as indie artists or indie creators, or even in technology and business, this is also true. If we all flood the same raft, it sinks. The strength we have right now, as far as continuing to be creative or independent workers, has to do with diversifying our strategies,
and
you know?
It feels like some of the things that we were just talking about in terms of South by Southwest are relevant to the theme of your newest album, Standing Stones, which does speak a little bit, right? Because you've got this sort of exhaustion by internet, mediocre algorithmic. Oregon Trail, mediocre algorithmic first date might be a little on the nose.
Hey, we need new love songs. We fall in love in new ways. We need new love songs.
It's painful because it's true. And another one, which we're actually going to play, called Like This.
Baby, let's go out tonight. I'll find the place that gets the best reviews. Send me your criteria and I'll design the perfect night for you. I've got a limited set of regular expressions in your size. So use these icons for your feelings so that I can more precisely empathize. So engagement's optimized. The resolution is so high in here. Surround sound is so crisp and clear. Just like in the montage where we met.
Man, it's so spot on, but it's so depressing.
If we've felt our feelings yet.
Right? It's so spot on. Maybe it's so depressing because it's so spot on.
Well, it's part of a song cycle, so you have to keep going. You have to get to the redemption at the end.
All right, okay.
But it's a character piece. I mean, it's a character piece about who I am sometimes at my worst moments on the internet. You know, you can spend a few minutes on Facebook connecting with a community really genuinely, or you can be scrolling endlessly through the same exact page and feeling immensely dissatisfied and insecure and reaching for something you can't get. And it's the same platform, but what you bring to it or what you need from it at different moments determines whether it's good for you or bad for you. And I think that's so interesting.
And do you think has it gotten worse? Like, is the internet tiring us out more? Or do you think it's just like anything with life? You just need to use it the right way.
I don't know. I don't know if we evolved for this quite yet. You know, maybe maybe a couple generations on will have evolved to have the boundaries to step away at the right time. But I think we're still like shiny object, you know, and we're attracted to it. And it brings us so many good things. It's hard to know how to walk away. It's like an endless dessert buffet, right? And maybe someday some of us have the discipline to stay away or to walk away at the right time. But a lot of us, especially those of us who are curious about everything, which I would venture to guess is the three of us here, it's very hard to back away at the right time. But but the thing, the redemption in this, though, is that I want to get to is that I have found a community of people that I never would have found geographically or in any other way. And they have become lifelong friends at this point. Like it, all of a sudden, I found this group of people on Twitter back in 2007, 2008, and realized I had found my tribe and they have stayed my tribe now for 10 years. Those friendships are real. The couches that they offer me to sleep on are real. The couches I've offered them to sleep on when they finally come visit me in Alaska are real. Like this, those relationships matter a lot. I think both my parents met their spouses on through internet dating, and it's the best relationships they've ever had. You know, it's there's not an unreality about it. There's just learning how to manage ourselves and how to connect our present with our past, and that's kind of what I write about. So,
if you want to hear more of Marian Call's new album, I mean, we can go on this all day, right? Because the three of us, anyway, it's called Standing Stones, and buy it. It's on Bandcamp. Where else can they get it?
It will be everywhere else soon, but it actually just came out like last week, so it's a Bandcamp exclusive for now because Bandcamp is a wonderful company.
Yep.
I love them.
We had the CEO on the program.
Oh, he's Ethan. Yeah. He's wonderful. Yeah. You can find it at MarianCall.com or just hunt in Bandcamp for
it. Excellent. Mm-hmm.
All right, and we're going to hear, we will have one more question for Marian Call, or Make Me Smart question. But before that, like all artists, we also have to pay the bills.
All right, one more question for Marian Call. It is the Make Me Smart question we ask everybody. And it's harder than you think. You ready? What is something you thought you knew, but you later found out you were wrong about?
Oh, everything. is that what makes it a hard question?
Yeah.
That everything springs to mind? Before I moved to Alaska, I grew up in the Seattle area, and I went to school at Stanford in Silicon Valley, and I right in the kind of heyday of the tech boom and the crash, actually, it was the first one. And I thought I wanted to work in the arts somehow, not in music. I swore I would never do music, but I wanted to work in the arts or film, and I wanted to move to Seattle or New York or LA or Austin or Nashville or, you know, DC or somewhere like that. And then I wound up sort of against my will moving to Alaska. And I was like, oh, one year. I'll work a crappy job that I don't like and I'll just endure it. And then I'll go back where the people are and the culture is and the arts jobs are, you know. And I was so, so wrong about that. I was utterly moronic now that I look back at it to think that the arts and the culture are where the, you know, highest concentration of people is as opposed to where the artists are. And the artists are everywhere. And the communities that support artists are everywhere. And there are some tiny towns I'm sure you've both, you know, been to or visited some point that really, really have transcendent art scenes. There's lots of them in Alaska. I mean, Homer, Talkeetna, I think has 1,200 people and is one of the sort of amazing arts places to visit in Alaska. And I think the best advice I ever got that helped me understand why I was so wrong about Alaska was don't fish where everyone else is fishing, which is so common sense, but it might be the best advice I've ever gotten in my life. And that was what I didn't understand that I now understand. Like if I had gone to Seattle and tried to get an arts job, you know how competitive those are and how hard it is to get one. And to a degree, you have to be cutthroat, totally committed, and also fit a certain mold to be able to get there. And like in Alaska, you can just start an arts organization if you want to, and other people will be like, cool, and they'll support you, and they'll kind of fund you, and they'll come along and show up and be there for whatever your vision is. And I there's so much freedom in going to a place where you have a contribution to make instead of trying to claw your way to the top of something. So yeah, don't fish where everyone else is fishing.
I think don't fish where everyone else is fishing should be a t-shirt, except it's not absurd. It is not an absurdity, but it's a great t-shirt. In honor of absurdities and other great ideas born on Twitter, Doug S. actually tweeted me a great idea, which is that we should have you, dear listeners, answer the Make Me Smart question. We ask it to everybody that we talk to, but that doesn't mean you can't tell us. So if you wouldn't mind, record a voice file on your phone and tell us what is something that you thought you knew and you later found out you were wrong about. Make a little recording and email it to us at makemesmart@marketplace.org because we want to hear them from everybody because, see, they're always awesome.
They are. More listener letters coming in just a sec. Some people still don't get podcasts. Yes, Mom, I'm talking to you. What's out there and how to listen. You can help change that with a click. Right now, think of somebody you care about, a friend of yours, whatever. What podcast would they really love to hear?
Got it? You got that person in your mind? All right, now do it. Hit that share button. Smash the share button. And if they don't know how to listen to a podcast, please show them how to download an app and then download a show and tell us what you shared with the hashtag TryPod, TryPod. And thank you for spreading the word about podcasts.
Where do we mail a letter?
All right, it is time to hear from you about what's on your mind, your emails, and your voice files. Like I just mentioned, they actually came in. The first email, though, Ryan Bundy, we got a lot of response to our interview with the Lyft CEO or Lyft president. Ryan Bundy writes, I'm a musician in Nashville, Tennessee, and when I'm not on tour, I will occasionally drive with Lyft. In my short time driving with Lyft, I've been shocked by how many people refer to their Lyft rides as Ubers. For example, I'll be driving someone and they'll answer a phone call and they'll say, yeah, I'm almost there. I'm in the Uber now. And that got me realizing the word Uber is becoming synonymous with ride sharing, something we just mentioned at the top of the show. He said, just like Kleenex is with a tissue, just like Band-Aid is with a bandage, let's take an Uber is becoming let's get a ride somewhere.
So last week, we got a great email from Barry Blitz about a German word that loosely translates, and Molly got this one, right? It was tricky. You can now say stuff in public that used to be embarrassing. Molly pronounced it. This week, we got an audio pronouncer from, I'm going to mess up her last name, Anna Craigmile. Here's the piece of tape.
The proper pronunciation for that word is salonfähig. Thanks for making this awesome show.
So there you go. Now we all know.
Oh. Yeah, we know. I didn't think that was that far off from how I said it. More power to you for doing it. I asked my German friends at the school auction this weekend, and they said it was, you know, passable, which is all my German has ever been. We also have an audio book recommendation, not necessarily an audio book, but you could probably, you know, read it that way too, but an audio book recommendation from Ryan Traher.
Hey, kind Molly. I'm currently reading That Used to Be Us by Thomas Friedman and Michael Mendelbaum. Even though it was published in 2012, its message remains painfully relevant today. It addresses four major challenges in the U.S. globalization, revolution of information technology, rising deficits, and energy consumption. Unfortunately, rather than confronting these things they warned about, like automation and a need for education reform or other nonpartisan solutions, we seem to be ignoring all of these problems. It appears the book was prophetic, but not in how we hoped.
Oh.
Yeah, right? That's not good.
Well, that was kind of a bummer, but maybe we should read it. So many good book recommendations coming in. Keep them coming. I love it. I mean, my list is now like 75 books long, but I don't care. Life is long.
I am, just to update everybody, perilously close to abandoning my book on Robert Lowell and his psychographic history. I'm trying, but
oh,
I can't.
You know what? That was a really valiant effort, and I will not judge you.
I blame Terry Gross. Go check out our website, a new listener corner on the landing page. Also, we put some of your book recommendations in a blog post with more to come, I promise.
And it would help us out a whole lot in the impressing our bosses department if you would spread the word about Make Me Smart, and please subscribe to the podcast wherever you like to podcast. Give us a review on iTunes. It all actually helps a lot in just making sure that we get to keep doing the show every week because it's kind of our fave. And now we got to go.
Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson, Bridget Bodner, and senior producer Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Daniel Ramirez. Our theme music is composed by Ben Tolliday and that very same Daniel Ramirez. He can do everything.
The executive producer of Marketplace is Satara Nieves, who can also do everything. And the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. Wish me luck in Austin.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.